You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Times Higher Education podcast. I'm Sarah Custer.
And I'm Miranda Prynne.
And on today's show, we are discussing employability and how universities are thinking about employability now in a post-COVID world. And of course, this question about employability is a sticky one because it's, on the one hand, something that students say is the biggest motivator for getting a higher education degree, getting a job after they graduate. But then universities consistently say that they aren't here to respond to demands of the labor market, and they aren't here to create graduates that meet the exact skilled labor that industry needs. They instead teach students soft skills like critical thinking, problem solving, and communication. But how does that translate really to online teaching and learning? And what does that look like in digital higher education? And of course, all of this is further complicated by the fact that the economy has been in a crisis for the past year, and there are very few jobs available, even for the most skilled workers.
Today, we're speaking to two very interesting individuals on this topic who bring a huge amount of expertise, very different perspectives. From a liberal arts education background and teaching in the Middle East, and then another from a very large research institution in the UK.
That's right. So I spoke with Sir Anton Muscatelli, Principal and Vice Chancellor at the University of Glasgow.
And I spoke to Nancy Gleason of New York University, Abu Dhabi, who has carried out a huge amount of research into the future of work and pedagogy for the fourth industrial revolution. She talked a lot actually around the fact that what she would deem employability in inverted commas now are those very soft skills that you referred to, Sarah, in your intro. In her view, the kind of changing nature of the workplace and the world around us, fast changing nature of the world around us, kind of requires these soft skills for, you know, future success. Hi there. Today I am talking to Nancy Gleason, who is Associate Professor of Practice of Political Science and Director of the Hilary Ballon Centre for Teaching and Learning at New York University, Abu Dhabi. Hi, Nancy. Good to talk to you. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thanks for having me today.
Pleasure. Now, we're here to discuss employability and the role of universities in fueling the future workplace. The last 12 months, we can all agree, has caused a lot of upheaval throughout the economy and labour market globally, making it a very challenging time for young graduates and young people generally looking for their first role. With that in mind, Nancy, what would you say employability, in inverted commas, means in 2021?
Well, this is a hard question to start off with, but I think an important one. I think it's different for different economies, first of all. So for the upper end jobs where the service industry is using cognitive skills of people, I think employability is about adaptability and resilience. This is in part due to COVID-19, but also because of other disruptive things happening in the world, climate change most of all, but also demographic shifts in the workplace and changes due to the automation economy. So skills such as curiosity, digital literacy, creativity are really in demand in the workplace today. And those people are, there is a talent war for people who can demonstrate those competencies. Now, technical skills might be a bit different in terms of what is most employable. Where do we see the biggest demand in the workplace? This tends to be around data analysis, computational skills related to programming, coding, machine learning, natural language processing. Those are where most economies are experiencing a pinch in the gap in between the skills available in the workplace and the skills in demand in industry. So what it means to be employable depends where you're at, but because of COVID-19 and because of automation and because of climate change, the the consistency of the skills in demand is changing very quickly. And so it's more about being adaptable to what is needed in a given moment within an industry that is the competency that employers are most looking for and rewarding when you're already in a working situation.
Yeah, and I mean, with bearing all that in mind, what I suppose is the role of universities, or what should the role of universities then be in preparing graduates, or sort of, you know, upskilling them for the workplace?
Well, this is a really important question. And it depends on whether or not this is a technical and vocational university or higher or post-secondary opportunity, or if it's a traditional undergraduate bachelor's degree awarding institution. But students face real financial pressures upon graduation in this day and age, and they need to be able to service debts, and they need to be able to thrive. And so in many economies, this means they need gainful employment. And so if families are, and the learners themselves are going to invest in higher education and the opportunities that that brings, then that needs to yield gainful employment. So sometimes in universities, they say there's a dangerous connection between industry and education, because industry shouldn't drive what people know. But at the same time, there is pressure on universities to demonstrate that graduates can come out and make a difference in the world from their schools. I myself come from a liberal arts university and a liberal arts university background, where there's huge importance also on civic engagement and social commitment to society. That's also very important, but it doesn't mean that everybody that goes to those types of schools is going to work in those fields and in those areas. But the obligation to make sure that your graduates can service their debts and still live a life of thriving is very important to universities. Whether or not they like it, it's the reality of the economy we're in now. If they don't do it, then they will continue to be superseded by employers who create their own credentials outside of formal education.
Yeah, and I mean, on that basis, you know, because as you say, graduates do, I guess, increasingly need to have some sort of security that they are going to be able to find good jobs after university. Do you think, well, what would the answers to that be? I mean, that certainly in the UK brings in debates around further education alongside higher education, which is arguably much more jobs focused. But could you perhaps see a danger that universities do start focusing too much on sort of purely churning out graduates for specific roles?
I think economies need a balance of this, which is why most regulatory frameworks for post-secondary education have 3 or 4, sometimes even here in the United Arab Emirates, 5 different classes of education. So with the Bologna framework in Europe, this is a 3-cycle system with a bachelor's, a master's, and a doctoral level. This enables the economy to have different types of expertise, and it enables people to find different niches of expertise in levels of knowledge, content knowledge, but also technical skill knowledge. And then, you know, most societies also have versions of technical and vocational schools. In the United States, they have community colleges. In Singapore, they have polytechnics. These are 2-year commitments to post-secondary education. The economy needs all of it, so we don't need everybody to do a 4-year or a 3-year plus degree. Now, the industries that do require a master's degree relate to your ability to identify new knowledge, the ability to conduct research, the ability to take more advanced expertise with specific types of tools. So I think it's okay if there are different types of schools that produce different types of expertise. Not everybody needs a 4-year degree to live a successful life, but everybody has to do more than the degree they pursue. So it's not enough to stop when you're 20, 22, 24, 26, 28. This new economy requires lifelong learning and constant upskilling and reskilling.
Well, I'm glad you've brought up lifelong learning, because I wanted to come on to that really, because as you say, it is becoming increasingly important in a sort of fast changing world, that people can be kind of reactive and responsive. So what would you like to, I suppose, see universities doing, or what steps would you like to see kind of higher education as an industry or a sector taking, to facilitate more lifelong learning rather than the more traditional kind of 3-4 year degree course?
Sure. So lifelong learning is about having curiosity, initiative, the ability to project independence in how you pursue knowledge outside of a traditional classroom. It has to do with your ability to transfer knowledge from one context to another into novel situations. And it has to do with your ability to reflect on your own prior learning and where your knowledge and cognitive gaps are. So a university can do lots of different things to help students develop those things. Curiosity can come from motivation, and reflection can come from learning how to write. Taking initiative can come from all kinds of spaces in the university experience, but certainly in leadership classes, innovation classes, entrepreneurship classes, and let alone the experiences of working with student groups and the other things that happen within campus life of a university. So these are some of the skills that make up lifelong learning. And, you know, if we can harness those through the pedagogies we pursue in the classroom, through the learning objectives we set out. So, for example, if you want students to know how to take initiative, how can you scaffold that into a syllabus where you reward students, or you assess and teach them how to expand their knowledge, skills, and abilities through their own effort, by completing the required work that generates new capabilities in these areas? So we know how to do this. It's a question of, can we do it at scale? And for the state, any given government, the challenge is that lifelong learning is a mindset shift. And then universities play a huge role in helping to deliver that mindset shift. But it's also about collaboration with governments and industry as well.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, I suppose one of the, you know, huge and expanding areas in higher education is the sort of digital, you know, technology enhanced education. COVID, clearly, we all know, has hugely accelerated online teaching provision. And in doing so, possibly opened up a huge number of opportunities, as well as posing a lot of challenges. In terms of the lifelong learning, I can see, you know, that online teaching must provide a sort of new channels to offer this. What would you feel that the kind of, I suppose, role of greater kind of online instruction, online teaching could offer in terms of, from an employability point of view?
Sure. I think online learning is essential to employability. It's absolutely essential that online learning play a role in boosting employability, actually. There simply is not enough seats and brick and mortar to address the disruptions in the workplace that are coming both from COVID-19 and from the automation economy, the digital economy, in order to handle the numbers of learners, no matter their age, that need to be regularly upskilled and reskilled. So the online context where we can reach people, and this is where access and equity become a real challenge, is that those with access to the internet and access to free online education and the motivation to learn will have a huge advantage of those over those who do not. And so it's more a question of, how do we put this online learning opportunity in the hands of more people, in order to enable them to be employable so that they can thrive and sustain themselves. But I absolutely believe that online learning should be harnessed to boost employability. And one of the ways in which we really see this taking off is the enormous venture capital fund investments happening inside educational technology. These firms are seeing a growth opportunity where universities have fallen short. They haven't filled the gaps. Yeah. And so educational technology is putting its arms around those gaps and closing it in to create other opportunities for learners. And there's no brick and mortar solution for the scale at which this needs to happen.
Yeah. And I realize, well, we could keep talking about this for a lot longer, but based on the time, we probably need to wrap up. So I just wondered, in kind of concluding all of this, if you could offer sort of any key takeaways, I suppose, on what you think or how you think universities can best prepare graduates for a global workplace, you know, what, in summary, those key capabilities they need to develop are.
Sure. So universities can best prepare graduates for the global workplace that is digital and disrupted through time-tested pedagogies, which is experiential learning, work-learn experiences, and really good curricular alignment. The content is no longer the sole purview of the institution of higher education. It's not the only reason, and it's a necessary but insufficient reason to go to college. So we need universities to be using these pedagogies to instill analytical thinking, tendencies towards innovation, active learning and learning strategies. If we can get universities to help students articulate that they have those skills and build those skills, then they are doing a great service to their learners and to society going forward.
Great. Well, thank you so much for talking us through all of that really interesting insight on this particular very topical issue. It's been really great talking to you, Nancy. Thank you for joining us on the THU Campus.
You too, podcast. Miranda. Thanks so much. I appreciate your time.
So, yeah, I think Nancy's key points there really are just this need to really teach students how to use, analyze, process information rather than the information itself. That's become the kind of key skill that employers are looking for. Did you talk around these subjects with Anton at all?
Yeah, so we did. I asked him about soft skills and just about kind of the future of digital teaching and learning and about those soft skills. And one thing that he mentioned was just the need for universities to be flexible and offer flexible course programming. So that's micro-credentials, that's lifelong learning, which I think is something that a lot of institutions are taking much more seriously now than they ever really have. The other thing that was interesting about Anton is that he's an economist. So I started out by asking him just kind of what he saw about the labor market post-pandemic. He said that right now, all we can really do is look at the short term because labor market scarring is a term that he said remains a big deal. And that's basically looking at youth unemployment and something that universities really need to have in their minds. He also predicted a premium on skills. And he said that's something you often see after big economic crises. So that's students coming out of universities that might have higher reputations will also have a greater wage premium. And that in turn can just further drive inequality. So universities' role in widening access and in creating social mobility will be much more important post-pandemic, he said. And then I asked him about the tendency of governments to use graduate earnings to make funding decisions and what he thinks universities should be doing right now to prepare graduates for a contracted labor market. Hi, Anton. Thank you so much for making time to speak with us today.
Thank you, Sarah. Good to be here.
Let's just jump right into it because I know that you're a very busy man and I don't want to take up too much of your time, but there's a lot of ground that I want to cover. So on this episode of the THE podcast, we're talking about employability, student employability. You are an economist by background. That's your expertise. So I'm going to just ask you, when we're looking at the post-pandemic job market, what does that mean for actually the future of work and skills that university graduates will need to have?
Well, it's a really important time, and my first sort of response to your question is that we need to look at the short term because labor market scarring remains a real danger. We know that during the initial lockdown, you know, employees under the age of 25 were around 2.5 times more likely to work in sectors that were shut down. We have that from the Institute for Fiscal Studies in the UK as well as the National Institute of Economic and Social Research. And the real danger here is a repeat of the 1980s, where research showed that the impact of youth unemployment on individuals was still felt two decades on, not just in terms of job satisfaction, but with regards to physical and mental health. So a number of the things that the UK government has done and that other governments around the world have done, the Treasury's Kickstart scheme, looking at apprenticeships, the Young Persons Guarantee in Scotland, these are important, and what is done to get people back into employment quickly, I think, is important. But as you said, there's a broader issue, because what the pandemic has done, it's accelerated trends around skills and work, which were already in train, and that probably would have taken 5, 10, 15 years in the making. And you'll be aware of the program that a number of commentators have put in place around the OECD, emphasizing the need to focus on 21st century skills. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is absolutely an acceleration of what universities were already doing. So, for instance, we know that it will be even more important to have critical thinking and problem-solving skills in graduates. That was already established there. But what we need is probably these to be applied more broadly, and making sure that everyone that comes to the university displays these skills, similarly for life and career skills. And then there are new skills. There are new areas of emphasis for universities around innovation and creativity skills. Again, you know, where previously they would find their way more in certain programs than others, and information, media, and technology skills. So I think what we need to do is make sure that we are able to really accelerate those developments that were already in train around the change in our programs around skills. Because you know, there is going to be an increased demand for digital skills following the pandemic. There'll be a more rapid shift in move to the use of technology as an enabler. And the ability to communicate and adapt to these new methods, I think, will be key in graduates. So these are, I think, some of the key things that we need to look at. We also need to look at economic inequalities in education, because we know these have increased in the pandemic. So I think, you know, priority for all of us who are part of the education sector is really to provide particular support to students from disadvantaged backgrounds to ensure access to higher education and to the skills that we provide within courses, which are not all delivered through, you know, the conventional course content.
I want to get back to this topic of 21st century skills and kind of what that's looked like in the pandemic in the past year. But just taking on your point that you just said there about universities really needing to take into consideration the economic inequalities that are coming as a result of this, what other sorts of things should universities absolutely be preparing for at this moment? Is it the economic inequalities? Is it a potential loss of industry, which has knock-on effects for industry partnerships? Is it making sure that they are more nimble and reactive to changing needs of skills?
Well, I think it's all of the above, and unfortunately for us, well, fortunately for us, because I do think we're very good at that. I think, you know, universities have to be very flexible and adaptable. And I think we've demonstrated during the pandemic when it's come to the switch to digital that we can do that very quickly. You know, universities have transitioned hugely, very, very effectively, very quickly to a blended model, proven that we can adapt very quickly and at a scale. Now, what we have to do, you know, in the post-pandemic world is there will be sectors that will grow much faster than pre-pandemic. There will be the challenge of the net zero challenge and the greening of the economy, which will mean an acceleration, again, of certain sectors. So, again, we need to show the flexibility to adapt to what these industries need around skills. On inequalities, I mean, this is a whole system issue, because we know that there are issues, for instance, around learning loss at school level for those students pupils from lower socioeconomic backgrounds who have been more impacted more by the interruption of schooling. So, you know, I think here we have to work as a system. It's not just a matter for universities or for colleges. We need to work together with the education sector and with governments to address some of those gaps. One of the other issues around economic inequalities, which is really important, is that inevitably, I think the premium for skills will increase post-pandemic, as it often does after a big economic crisis. And so we know that there will be a tendency for those students who come out of institutions that are have a higher reputation to command, if you like, higher wage premia, and that will drive inequality in terms of outcomes. And again, we must ensure that we play our role in terms of social mobility, in terms of widening access. I mean, those things will become even more important post-pandemic than they were before.
Mm. Some of your comments there seem to hit on perhaps a double-tiered university system that might actually end up happening as a result of this in terms of reputation and the employability that and that a certain degree gets you and the ability of universities to attract students. And that kind of brings me on to my next point, which is about governments focusing on graduate outcomes and really ingraining that in higher education funding policies and different accreditation policies. My question is that sound policy just in general, in your opinion, because it's something we're seeing in the UK, especially now with Gavin Williamson, but it's existing in Australia as well and other parts of the world. Is that fair? And also, is if it is in place, is there not a risk of further inequality within the university system itself in the UK if more universities are able to pump out those graduate outcomes or have better graduate outcomes, graduate employability, if there is scant jobs to have?
Well, that's a fascinating question, isn't it? And I think, you know, if it's used as a metric to decide where public funding should go in terms of higher education, then I think graduate outcomes, of course, are a metric, a valuable metric. Nobody's denying that it isn't valuable. But it's only one metric because they have to be deployed alongside a whole basket of indicators rather than as a standalone proxy for educational quality or the return to the public investment. And there are real problems with it, as we know, because jobs of value to society in the voluntary, in the public sector, in the health sector, we've seen during the pandemic, you know, health and social care workers, they're not priced in the same way as in a completely free open market in certain private sector occupations. So one thing the pandemic's highlighted and something economists have always understood is that there's a big, big difference between the concept of price, in this case, the level of earnings, and societal value. And if we're using graduate outcomes as a way to say, well, where do we get the biggest buck in terms of societal value for a pound of public money, then you can't just look at graduate outcomes. You need to look more broadly about the value of society that graduates bring. And of course, and there's a whole range of other factors around societal value, but also the academic integrity of programs, the breadth and depth of the educational base, you know, the civic and global perspectives and engagement that our graduates have, because these will all impact in a non-monetary way on you know, GDP as well as well-being in the economy. So, so I would urge government to say, you know, put your economist hat on, look at not only market outcomes but also externalities, non-market outcomes, which are just as important, you know, in driving societal value and the bang for the public buck. You know, that's what matters. It's not just about wages. It's about other dimensions too.
Mm-hmm. Let's pivot a little bit, and I want you to put your hat on now as the principal of the University of Glasgow. How are you taking the post-pandemic economy? How is that factoring into your strategy as a university leader?
Well, as you would expect, we are scenario planning on how the pandemic impacts on our underlying assumptions about higher education delivery. We are about to publish a strategic plan for the next 5 years at the University of Glasgow, World Changes Together, and that will highlight a number of these areas. There are, of course, uncertainties, so we need to scenario plan a bit. But, you know, one of the areas where we are taking what we've done during the pandemic and really gearing up is looking at, you know, upskilling courses that we can provide more generally, not just, you know, not just to students on campus, but also to people who want to retrain. And, you know, in the area of lifelong learning and upskilling, we've been doing that at a credit-bearing level, at a postgraduate thought level, but also on a CPD basis. And, you know, these include courses around climate change, carbon literacy, project management, which is a very practical and important skill if you come back to graduate skills, management and leadership in health services. So we have a number of courses that have been developed alongside our what we do. The other dimension is, of course, how we embed some of these courses of micro-credentials for our for our students on campus. And again, you know, a much more blended offering is something we're driving from that. So it's something which is really important to us. It's absolutely central to our new learning and teaching strategy as part of our World Changes Together university strategy.
I mean, what you're describing there, you're talking about very practical courses, micro-credentials, being much more flexible in the types of degrees and courses that you're offering students is quite radical and would have been radical thinking 5 years ago, especially coming from a big research-based institution like the University of Glasgow. Do you foresee this being a trend among higher education just in general going forward? Have universities perhaps learned the lesson? Are they successfully responding to the pandemic accurately?
I think we're seeing a number of universities responding in this way. But again, you know, it's back to my initial theme, which is about flexibility and adapting to what our students want, what our potential students want, and what industry and you know, all the sectors for whom we produce graduates want as well. And what they want is a whole range of 21st century skills, a whole range of graduate attributes. And some of them will be in the form of courses that might have a more vocational or practical bent, but some of them will be actually perhaps more traditional courses, but ensuring that we do deal with all those skills I mentioned earlier, ranging from the problem-solving skills, which we always had, to the information, media, and technology skills that are relatively newer in the last 5 to 10 years.
On that topic of 21st century skills, tell me what that looked like, that transmission of 21st century skills or soft skills at Glasgow in the past year, whenever everything was switched to online and remote teaching and learning.
Well, I mean, it's a really interesting question. And I think, you know, to some extent, of course, that's not the ideal environment. It'll only be in transition, and because there are a number of things, of course, which could be conveyed just as effectively online, and indeed more effectively online. For instance, some of the small group sessions, some of the interactivity that you can get online is much better than actually sometimes you can even get in person. So some of those skills around communication, I think, actually, and communicating through a digital medium is something that's actually been enhanced by the pandemic. But we've also been able to also experiment with some interesting things. You know, a colleague of mine in philosophy, for instance, has been doing a lot of work around the use of VR and AR in learning and teaching. And, you know, some of that, of course, you know, pre-pandemic relied on in-person bringing people together using VR equipment. Now he's pivoted that totally towards, you know, VR by proxy. So actually being able to use some of the, you know, things I mentioned before, which is the use of information media skills and communication skills, but also some of the other skills around innovation and creativity through, you know, a very different use of VR, what he calls VR by proxy. So it's a really interesting example of how adaptable we've been, and even in using technologies which were actually designed largely for face-to-face teaching. So these are some of the, you know, that's one dimension. There are other dimensions as well. I mean, I think one of the things that, you know, going online for a number of courses has been able to allow us to do is actually, you know, I think it's really challenged university teachers to think about how to bring some of their courses to life, because you have to teach in a very different way, especially if you're teaching in a synchronous mode. You know, you there are different attention spans when you're working on Zoom. So actually, it's led to a real, I think, renewal. And, you know, my colleagues have been hugely innovative in this area in terms of looking at the content of some of their work and around some of the, you know, some of the problem-solving skills in their particular disciplinary domain. So I think there's some really interesting things. There's things we've lost, and let's be clear, otherwise, you know, online would dominate in the future as well. I think there's things we've lost. We've lost the social dimension, of course, and that is something that needs to be integrated back. But I have no doubt that post-pandemic, what we'll have is we'll take the best of what we've learned from the online experience, particularly around some of those 21st century skills. The ability, for instance, to to digitize material that otherwise probably less accessible, and to make it more universally available within courses. I think, you know, that's one important dimension that will come through. That will come through, in the new hybrid post-pandemic world.
Final question for you, Anton. With your economist/university leader hat on, give us two or three things that you think universities should absolutely be preparing for now over the next few years, and to help graduates prepare as they enter probably a very contracted economy and troublesome job market.
That's a really good question, and it's a really difficult question as well, Sarah. I think what we need to do is ensure that graduates are aware of the skills that the future labor market requires and how they can reflect that within their particular disciplinary environment, and giving them, stretching them beyond that disciplinary environment. Now, we've seen some of those discussions, for instance, you know, T-shaped graduates versus I-shaped graduates pre-pandemic. I think what this does is it puts even more emphasis on us to be able to ensure that our learners understand what that, you know, the top bit of the T means exactly in their disciplinary context. I think that's really, really important. The second thing that we have to do, especially once we return on campus fully, is ensure that we, you know, embed all these other, you know, new areas of emphasis across all our courses. I mean, as I said, it's an acceleration of change, and we need to do that. The third is that, you know, post-pandemic, we know that what the next big challenge is for humanity, what the next big societal challenge is. It's around the environment. And so one of the big things for us, and we, you know, we've developed a new Glasgow Green strategy alongside our institutional strategy, which commits us to being a, you know, net zero with some offset by 2030. Now, that's a big, big challenge, and it means that we need to make good progress between now and 2025. But so that will involve, again, all students, and then we'll need to reflect, but that we'll need to make sure that they understand what their role is in society, but also give them the skills that they need to address these issues and to be literate about carbon neutrality and climate change in their own domain. So I think, again, you know, these are three of the, I think, of the big things for us over the next few years.
Great, Anton. Really insightful, and hopefully some advice that anybody working in a university can take some inspiration from, because I'm sure many of them are facing a lot of the similar challenges that you guys are facing at Glasgow. So thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Sarah. Good to speak to you.
And that was Sir Anton Muscatelli, Principal and Vice Chancellor at the University of Glasgow. I think that's all we've got time for today. Thanks so much for listening.
Yeah, thank you. And if you'd like to read more from Nancy Gleeson, you'll be able to find a link to a really fascinating feature on how liberal arts education must embrace employability. We'll include this link in the episode notes.
And also be sure to check out all of our online teaching and learning resources on THG campus. You can find that at timeshighereducation.com/campus. We'll also include a link to that in the episode notes. Big thanks to Anton and Nancy for taking the time to speak with us today. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you. Bye.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.